whenever you are and however you happen to be listening. We're so glad you have chosen to tune in to DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week. Hey, are you registered to vote? We're getting down to the nitty-gritty. This is it. This is the last week. There are still just a few days. Some states, you can still register to vote in time for November 8th's big election. Please let your voice be heard. Geeks who speak are very important this year. We want the gamer voice to be loud and clear. So if you have not voted yet, head over to vote.org, register to vote, and make your voice heard. DLC is on the air, and it is your downloadable commentary for the week delivered the way we love it to be. And that's completely free thanks to our sponsors this week, Casper, Mac Weldon, and Linode. They made that possible, bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I'm joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis. The guy who always stands creepily behind me, gripping my chair, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hey, Jeff. My daughter's body is banging.
Way to stay on message there, Christian. Hey, I'm so excited this week. You know, it's always great when there is a Canadian holiday. It's always my favorite time because that means we get to dip into a deeper pool of guests. Some of my favorite guests who are only available to us during Canadian holidays. You know that DLC is always your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, it's Canadian Thanksgiving, which means we get to have DLC stand for Diversions and Labors Combined again. Because from GamersWithJobs.com and the Gamers with Jobs conference call podcast, our friend, Mr. Sean Andrich, is back with us. Hey, Sean.
Hey, guys. What a pleasure to be back.
Oh, thank you.
On this wonderful Thanksgiving in Canada. I am thankful that you guys opened with hilarious presidential election jokes.
Yeah, that's what we do.
We are loving it up here in Canada. It's been just so good so far. It's been so good. Very entertaining and terrifying.
Terrifying really more than entertaining is the problem for me. But yes, go ahead, Christian.
Sean, can I ask this is a very U.S.-centric and ignorant question. But like, you guys have to call our Thanksgiving American Thanksgiving, right? Like, we're not such jerks globally that you refer to your own Thanksgiving as Canadian Thanksgiving like you just did. You're just doing that to placate us.
I'm just doing that for the just contextually for the people in the virtual room here right now. We just call it Thanksgiving.
Thank God. October, I was like, what did we do to you guys? No,
they call it Canadian. They call it American Christmas, and we own everything. I want to right at the top of the show before we get into anything else. I want to thank numerous people who sent us emails this week. Of support. I had talked about how, you know, we talked a little bit about Palmer Luckey and made our voices very much heard on that topic. And there was a lot of negative feedback that came in after that. We talked about that a little bit last week. And boy, there were so many incredibly nice emails of support saying that, hey, guys, we appreciate you speaking from the heart and tackling that issue and not avoiding it. So thank each and every one of you who sent emails to us this week, because we got a whole bunch of them. I would mention specific names, but there's really too many. So that's it made us feel very good, and I appreciate it. And you can always send emails of good or bad comments. We appreciate your feedback. You can always send those to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. But let's get into the show. I'm excited. We got so much to talk about. There's news, but I'm really most excited about talking about games. We've got Mafia 3. We've got Gears of War 4. We've got more Forza Horizon. We've got Mario. It's Thanksgiving, and it's a cornucopia. We got a bounty overfloweth. So let's get into the beginning of the show with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by using our hashtag on Twitter, that's DLCSOTW, or by visiting our subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Great community there of cool people to hang out with. Sean, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What do you consider your story of the week?
You know, I think the story of the week for me is probably going to be the Oculus Kinect 3. Just because there hasn't been a lot else jumping out at me this week that was really exciting, but Oculus Kinect had some really interesting stuff in their announcements. Some new games. We finally got our announcement for the touch controllers. Mm-hmm. Now, Jeff, am I right? Do you have those controllers?
I do.
I'm a little behind, so I don't know if you've already talked about it. So I thought that was really interesting to finally get that announcement, that release date. New headphones for the Oculus is kind of interesting. There's two really important things out of Oculus Kinect that I think are really cool, other than the games, touch controllers, things we already kind of knew about. One, that Oculus is working on basically a headset that's not tied to a PC, where the PC is actually part of the actual headset. That's really exciting. And then the other thing I think is really interesting is the new, what are they called? A synchronous space warp.
Yeah. Their phrase. Catchphrase? I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. It's more exciting than Vive has something that's not quite as good, apparently, but similar, and they just call it reprojection.
Right. And I think actually that NVIDIA themselves are working on a similar technology. Everybody is racing to find ways to optimize VR graphics, because we need such high frame rates to make it a non-puke machine. Everybody needs to find ways to lower the cost of entry for this stuff, make it so that lower end computers can run the software and optimize the frame rate so that you can have better graphics on a lower end spec. And this is going to be another this is Oculus's version of that. As you said, it's called asynchronous space warp. Basically, it means that you can run games at 45, or really anything, at 45 frames per second, and then it doubles the frame rates and makes it smoother, so that you don't have to have any kind of motion sickness, because usually you need 90 frames per second. So that the end result of that is that they're offering these Oculus ready PCs that are at a much lower price point, because they can be much less powerful computers. They talked about a $499 or $399, was it, $400 computer that I guess it was $499, $500 computer that can run Oculus, which I think is an important place for the technology to be, for people to be able to jump in at basically a console price point. And it's similar to technology that the PSVR is reportedly using to increase frame rates there to make it a little smoother experience. So I think that's a really positive thing, as you said, and I'm anxious to see how it's going to work and if it's actually going to be implemented on higher end machines as well, or if they're going to make the computers use their horsepower, or if they're going to actually use that to, make better graphics at a lower frame rate and just use the tech to double the frame rates.
I think it makes for a really confusing space in VR right now, because there's a few things at play. Actually, if you own an Oculus and you have an NVIDIA card, there are some hacks you can do. You can change your registry entry and actually try it right now. So it is something you can actually give it a shot yourself. The issue with Vive is that, the issue with Vive is reprojection. When that kicks in, basically when you start dipping below 90 frames, in order to save you from feeling like you want to hurl everywhere, it'll basically make things smoother at a lower frame rate. On the Vive, the problem is that when reprojection kicks in, you lose the sense of presence.
Yeah.
It really reduces that quite a bit. And that's part of the whole point of VR. If you don't feel like you're in the room and everything feels kind of flat, you might as well be playing on a screen at that point. So what I'm hearing from people is a synchronous space warp, it doesn't have quite the same hit. And so it keeps your motion smooth. But what some people are saying is that movement of like NPCs, things going on the screen, can look kind of funny. So there's a lot of interesting stuff. I think if they start developing with a 45 frame rate target in mind, I think it's going to hurt VR's impact a little bit. And that's a little bit of a concern, and it kind of muddies the water too. Like, I think it's fine as a fallback position, but Oculus positioning this as, well, now that we've gotten it so it's at least workable at 45 frames, we can sell you cheaper PCs that can run it. I think the possibility then becomes we're sort of cutting off our nose to spite our face, because all of a sudden the experience is not going to be that same super immersive experience that we've been experiencing, and people have that first wow moment when they put on the Vive. Like, I've run or on the Oculus, I've run so many people, so many family members who have no interest in technology into my Vive, and that sense of presence just, they come out of that thing like they're it's almost like their perspective on the world has shifted a little bit, almost as if like, wait, so that wasn't real, is this real? Like, they almost like you get that dumb, like, you know, that, you know, you're really high in college and you just watch The Matrix.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of feeling, you know, and all that is a piece of technology they put on their head. So if your first exposure to that's going to be at 45 frames a second, it's not going to be as good as 90, even if they do have tricks to alleviate that somewhat.
What is your go-to first experience for family members?
It's funny because it really depends on the person. I actually look at my library and I look at who's going to try it and then I go from there. So I actually end up going into, what is it called? The Blue?
Yeah, I use that all the time. It's a great one.
All the time for kids because kids, they love it. You don't need to move around a lot, which is good because if you're, let's say, 8 years old and under, you're going to forget that you're not in a real place and you're going to start walking into things. Or my five-year-old nephew was so scared. He basically sat on my lap the whole time. Like not scared, but like he was interested, but nervous too. So that was really cute. So I like the Blue because, and things do respond to you a little bit when you get close to them, like little like sea plants will open and close. And that's a good one for that. For older people, I like to put people into the lab. If they're gamers, I'll take them to Longbow. Mm-hmm. And if they're just like my uncle, who's in his 50s at this point, I put him into that shopkeeper one in the lab.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Because you're standing in a room, somebody talks to you, you don't need to interact a lot. If you don't have video game language, it's like a nice little half step because you can interact with some stuff, but it's gentle, right? So it really just depends on who it is and what they're into.
Yeah, the first time that guy walks into the room in that you know, little storefront place and there's like, oh my God, there's a person in here. It's a pretty amazing experience.
Yeah, it's that eye contact thing.
Like
it's a sense of eye contact. And that's why presence is so important. And if your frame rate's not as good and if you're doing tricks to try and keep it all running smoothly, I'm just afraid if you lose that, it's going to feel more like you're playing a game in a theater and the screen is really big, but you're not necessarily, your brain isn't going to be tricked well enough that you're actually in it.
Yeah, I think you make an excellent point there. And I hope that they maintain the high end target. And but I do think that it needs to be accessible. And I think they understand the need to have the market be a little wider than this crazy high end PC market right now. And talking about that standalone headset, they're talking about it being between the two existing places for VR, which is, you know, mobile for basically, you know, $100 on your cell phone and this high end $800 experience. Are you excited for a standalone product like they showed? You know, it's not a product yet, but, you know, clearly they're working on it.
Oh, huge. I think getting rid of cords is going to be massive. Because that's one of the, I think as soon as you make something that's standalone, there's two elements I think that need to go away in order for this to take the next step. We need to be able to walk around without any cords. And we need to also get rid of room scale sensors, needing to have these separate things and basically locking a room down for VR. And I'd rather have the helmet have enough cameras or some sort of infrared peripheral on the helmet itself. And it's a hard thing because it needs to be light as well, that can basically make sure you don't run into anything and still give you that same, I'm not going to run into stuff protection, but lets you move freely. So I could be in any room in the house, or I could even be walking around, be in VR and still feel like I have, like I'm safe to do so and I'm not nervous about it.
Yeah.
I am super excited about that though. I think that's the next step. Like if you watch, I don't know, if you like, you look to sci-fi, right? Like one of my favorite guilty pleasures is watching this anime called Sword Art Online. And it, the whole story is like people get trapped in VR basically, and it's VR MMO, and you know, their bodies are alive, but they're stuck in the VR. And if you die in the MMO, the headset blows up and kills you. It's a silly concept, but when they put these helmets on, they're free floating helmets. They can lay in their bed and they have full control using their mind. They feel like they're really in there and they have full movement and everything else. I think mind control is a little ways off, but I think getting that sort of separating from the machines, the power of this stuff, and having a little bit more freedom to move is going to be a really important part of it.
Yeah, I think at that point too, I think AR becomes really the thing, right? Once you're able to put it on in any place and wander around, it feels like you want to incorporate that place where you are into the experience. And I think that's kind of where the HoloLens it feels like the right approach. And maybe this is kind of what all of these devices will converge toward, is the ability to either transport me to a completely new place or layer things onto the place I'm in already. I found it very exciting, the end of the Oculus Connect keynote, where they had that scientist on basically talking about what he sees in 5 years being this technology and how rapidly it's all going to happen. I mean, I got chills kind of listening to what he expects in 5 years. That's a very short amount of time.
Oh, in real life terms, yeah. Historical terms, absolutely. In technology terms, I don't know. Like I got the iPhone 7 just because I was in that it's time to upgrade space in my contract and stuff. And that thing is so fast, and yeah. It's so fast for what little amount of space it takes up. It just doesn't seem like a huge stretch that in 5 years we're gonna have enough processing power on the go to do a lot of really cool stuff. The last thing I think about Oculus Connect that was interesting was that they had the big question just in plain text on the wall: will you do room scale? Yes. Yeah. Which is so important because they've been so resistant to that. Now, I know that like the Oculus on its own came with the one standee, right? The infrared thing.
Correct.
Do the touch controllers bring another one into the picture?
Like, they do. Yeah, okay, they come two. With a second standee, but you need a third one evidently
to do room scale. Now the Oculus buy-in is, I can't remember how much the Oculus itself is. Is it $600?
Yeah, so you're at 800 with the touch controllers, and another 79 for a third stand camera.
Yeah, so you're almost at parity with the Vive,
yeah.
If not at parity. And so that's an interesting wrinkle. I think that it's, I understand why they would do it that way. I think that once they brought the touch controllers in, I was really hoping they could do a room scale right out of the box, like rather than make it feel kind of optional, because it's going to disincentivize developers from porting stuff to the Oculus as quick, right? The more parity we have between the Vive and the Oculus, the better it's going to be for VR in general. Cause, we'll probably talk about it a little more in the game section, but my experience with VR is cooled a little bit because we're in a lull. Right. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of big releases. So just kind of waiting and seeing.
I do think that they're smart in that they made a big deal about games coming from really prominent publishers, games that look like full experiences, AAA experiences. They announced three new ones, Epic Games' Robo Recall, which looks just ridiculously fun. It reminds me, we talked a lot last week about Bulletstorm because they announced a remaster for Bulletstorm. And this looks like the same kind of fun of Bulletstorm. Is this just like chaotic, improvisational playground of shooting? And it's coming from Epic Games. It looks really neat. They developer of the Metro series 4A games showed a title called Artica 1, and again another shooter, but it looks like a very conventional video game that I think gamers can already recognize as being high quality. And then Ready at Dawn showed Lone Echo, which is another first-person experience that used a really interesting method of movement where you're grabbing things in zero gravity and moving yourself along. All three of those, I think, were pretty impressive games to be showing there, in the sense that they're not small experiences, they're not mini-game collections, they're not proof of concepts. These look like big AAA experiences.
Yeah, they look really cool. So I'm really interested to see that, especially the one navigating through space.
Yeah,
that's a really interesting idea, and it's also interesting in the sense of, can you make me feel like I'm doing this without also making me want to vomit? I feel that way about most VR experiences, but that one especially, I'm really curious about how they do that.
Cool. All right, moving on. Christian, what is your story of the week?
I think in this kind of, we're in the games coming out slow news week, there was the leak before, I forget if it was like the French website or something that leaked it, but now it's confirmed that Infinite Warfare, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare and Modern Warfare will require 130 gigs of install space. That's for both games, both day one patches, and the remaining Modern Warfare remastered maps that come out before the end of the year.
And but the good news is I don't need to have my disk in the drive, right? When I install 130 gigs of stuff on my...
Not if you buy them digitally, you don't.
Well, then I've already, you know, downloaded. But, right. No, this is install if you have the disk.
Right. No, yeah, that's how big the games are. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it is insane in the sense that, holy moly, these games are huge. I guess the textures or whatever they're doing is huge. But also, you know, we are all digital hoarders, right? Like, a 500 gigabyte hard drive, get out of here. Like, we joke about how NVIDIA right now, this generation, has made you just throw your other graphics card in the garbage because they're like, oh, you have a 1080? Well, sorry. Here's an, yeah. And now it's like, oh, you have a 1 terabyte solid state drive? Blah, who cares? Here's a 20 terabyte. Good luck. Yeah. You're going to fill it up. And granted, yes, you can delete the game without deleting your saves, and you know there are plenty of workarounds. And the Xbox One, kudos to them for including this, and I can't believe PlayStation still doesn't. The inclusion of the ability to plug in an external hard drive and have games saved and read off that. But like, wow, is there? I remember when Xbox Live launched, you know, there was that limit of whatever it was, 200 megabytes or whatever games could be.
Like, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, Sean, is there a limit or are we going to get games that are 500 gigs and it's just like, oh, you want to play AAA hotness? Delete everything.
I don't know. Like, I've been living in a version of this with like playing on the Wii and the Wii U, where you're quote unquote cleaning out the fridge once in a while and deleting things and making room for new things. We've even gone through this with our cell phones, right? If you got a 16 gig phone, that's nothing. Like, that's nothing. You've got 1,000 pictures on there and you're already well on your way, let alone music. So like this, I mean, this is over a fifth, you know, almost a third of the hard drive on a 500 gig console. I think the hard drives are just going to have to keep scaling up. I think that's the only way around it. I don't see games getting smaller at all. Gears of War 4 on the PC is like 80 or 90 gigs.
Yeah, it's huge.
They're massive. And what's crazy to me is that, like, Quantum Break, for example, is also a massive game. But part of that is because there's these huge, long... like, if you actually included the full motion video in Quantum Break, that is a huge, huge game. And Gears of War, it's all in-game cutscenes and stuff, but I guess it's just the textures and everything else are so big. I don't see this. It's just going to get worse. It's not going to get any better.
Oh, yeah. And if we're talking about
my PS4, and I threw a 1 terabyte drive in there a long time ago just because I was already hitting that limit.
If we're talking about 4K games being the next thing, you got to have 4K textures, and it's only going to get bigger from there. Yeah.
And then data caps, like if you have, I know we're talking about this as the install off the disk, but I think it was John Davison was tweeting that, you know, where he is in San Francisco, he kind of has one provider and he's got a terabyte limit.
Yeah.
Paying overages. And I don't know, like, we are hitting the breaking point of cloud computing or storage or data centers. Like, it's like this game of chicken and no one's relenting yet. It's insane. Sorry.
It's happening. No, it's happening in our chat room too. Chrysoface says, well, there goes 1/10 of my Comcast data cap.
Yeah.
And I like Gaucho Cam says, what's compression? it's whatever the equivalent of feature creep is. It's just creep. It's just a size creep, I guess.
And like, I know it's easy to look at this and have this like chin hit the table moment because 130 gigs is huge. So, okay, so you break that in half, right? And because it is two games and you got like, how big is my total Halo 5 install at this point? I don't know. You know, because like that came at me piecemeal or something. And like, this is both games plus the additional maps that are coming out. So perhaps we've already had games that are this size. Like, how big is Uncharted? The remaster plus Uncharted 4 plus a map pack plus whatever. I don't know, but it's just like to go into the store, to like walk into Best Buy and know that the thing I'm holding in my hand is going to need to download and install 130 gigs on my console is like a water in the face moment of like, whoa, wake up.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the olden days, you can only have one game in your console at a time. Now it's just like that, only a little bit different.
Back in the day, I whenever this kind of stuff comes up, I think of my brother because he lives out in the country. He's not a rich dude by any stretch, but he's still definitely a gamer. But his internet is like maybe 7 megabits per second downloads, maybe, you know, 500 megabits, 0.5 megabits per second upload, and. Like it's and he's got an original Xbox One. Like it's almost a non-starter for him. Like yeah. Between just downloading all this stuff, these day one patches and everything else, at 7 megabits per second, a day one patch that's a
becomes
few gigs.
A day 10 patch by the time
exactly. By the time he's done downloading it, the new patches come out. it's not good. So this is just. I don't see this getting better. I'm actually in some way, I'm curious about how where Nintendo goes with the NX.
Yeah.
And what their intention is there, how big their drive is, what kind of medium they're using to deliver those games. And
cartridges, evidently.
Well, and that's an interesting approach, right? Yeah. That's a really interesting thing to bring to go to cartridges for a main console, depending on how much space those cartridges can have. So there's a lot of things up in the air right now, but there's definitely... feeling that haves and have nots gap in terms of how much technology you have, how much speed you have in order to play something like Infinite Warfare, which is a very mainstream game.
Right.
All of a sudden, the very mainstream are getting squeezed out a little bit in terms of actually being able to participate easily.
I think that's a great point. And I don't want to date myself too much, but I did, when I was a young kid, I collected cans to save up enough money to buy a 10 megabyte hard drive for my computer. And I thought at the time, I'm never going to fill this thing up. It's too huge. Yeah.
Are you still using that as your boot drive?
Yeah, that's my main boot drive.
I think maybe the silver lining of this is like, I guess I am kind of glad that maybe it is I started to say they're playing chicken, but like maybe this will force Comcast or whatever, or the government, if you think it's a public utility and that should happen. Like, I think at some point this conversation comes to a head where the companies are saying, we need to deliver this content to our consumers, whether it's Netflix, 4K streaming. And there's so many bottlenecks, like, you know, you're in the country, we got to get stuff out there. I don't know if it's that Facebook internet balloon or you know, what we do or how we get rid of data caps, because I know this stuff is expensive to, you know, line a neighborhood with fiber. But I almost kind of like that maybe the companies here are pushing it further and further and further. So finally, we need to update our infrastructure so that we can keep evolving this kind of stuff for gaming and also for stuff outside gaming where it's kind of a daily necessity.
Well, what I can definitely say is like our local cable modem providing company is Shaw here in Canada, and they're kind of like Shaw Rogers, like they're fairly national as far as Canada goes. They recently upgraded my service in my area. I don't believe it was even fiber based, but I'm pulling like 170 megabits per second download,
nice,
and about 20 up for less than $100 Canadian a month. So it is getting better in places where the population is dense enough, but it's just like anything else. If you don't live in a dense area where there's a lot of people to justify the cost, that infrastructure is going to be very slow getting to you.
At this point, he's just trying to get me to move to Canada, Christian.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought we're only supposed to move there, Sean, when things go absolutely horribly here. Quit making it sound like a place we want to live in anyway.
It's a magical fantasy world. Right?
I know where you guys live, and it's let's just say this. We're just above freezing here right now.
Oh, yeah. 86 degrees outside at 10 a.m. So
Yeah. So if you're going to move to Canada, just go straight north from where you are and stop in that BC area. You'll be a lot happier.
But you can just put on your Vive and download That's anything true. You want and be yeah, anywhere you want.
Being a tropical island, it's just that easy.
Yeah, or Mark Zuckerberg's house that apparently has a live streaming VR camera at all times a day. So, you know, it's easy.
Speaking of VR, Google announced the Daydream View VR, which is even a lower price point than the Samsung Gear VR. It's going to work on any of the Daydream-ready smartphones, including the Pixel and Pixel XL that Google announced. $79. It's a cloth. It's like... got microfiber cloth on the outside. What did you think of this, Sean? Do you think this is cool?
I don't care. I just don't. Like every time I look at mobile VR, sorry, I say mobile and I get in trouble. I guess it's a Canadian thing. Every time I look at mobile VR and it's just without the interactive aspect of it, it just doesn't, Daydream's a good name for it. Let's put it that way. I'm not interested in wearing it out in public, which is the only time I'd really want to probably engage with something like this. I could see maybe using it on an airplane, but I don't mind doing it in the privacy of my own home. I think I've just hit that age gap where it's just not normal enough for me to feel like I could use that in public and feel okay with it. And if I'm at home, I'm going to use my Vive or I'm going to do something else. I'm not going to sit with a screen strapped to my face.
But it's got cloth on it, so it's like clothes.
Yeah, I'm wearing clothes. I have cloth.
Now you have clothes for your face.
There's nothing exciting about that. It's amazing to me. We're announcing a new tech and there's cloth on it. Everybody's like, oh my God, cloth? Like cotton? Are you crazy? This is wild. Take my money. No, I'm not.
It's like a sweater for your eyes.
I'm not into it.
I would say my actual story of the week is Oculus Connect, but I want to bring up briefly the fact that evidently Beyond Good and Evil 2 is actually happening. Weirdly, the announcement is that it's in pre-production, which means they haven't been working on it, which is weird because they said 8 years ago that they were teasing it and saying it, you know, it was coming. But Michel Ancel is actually working on it. This was an announcement that happened on Facebook on the original Beyond Good and Evil games Facebook page. I bring it up for two reasons. First, are we still excited about Beyond Good and Evil? This is a game that got a lot of justifiable praise when it was released, but it's super antiquated by today's standards. What could a sequel possibly do? And the second reason I bring it up is weird that they waste this on a Facebook post, right? We have seen the last two or three E3s where these kinds of always wished for games get big stage presences at E3 and big moments, and everybody comes out buzzing about Shenmue and Last Guardian and all these games that we didn't think were ever going to happen, and now they are. Ubisoft could clearly have made a big deal about this, and yet it happens in a offhand Facebook post? Weird to me.
It's what Ubisoft does, though. Ubisoft has been really up on this trend that I actually really like, in that they announce a game and release it within the year. So I think that in this case, my guess is that there's so many people who keep asking them a lot if Beyond Good and Evil 2 is coming out. So I can see why they just want to say, yes, we're now working on it in some official capacity. But I think they learned their lesson last time, because they put out like this CG thing with that pig guy. I don't remember much.
Yeah, it's like an image
on the side of a highway. Like, they put out this little CGI video thing that was years ago. So
yeah,
I think announcement on Facebook's fine, but with any luck, we're not going to see a big announcement or a big reveal trailer until it's, you know, a couple quarters away from coming out. That's I actually prefer it that way.
G Wizard in the chat disagrees with me. He said he loves Beyond Good and Evil and the game still holds up. So I find that hard to believe. I haven't played it in a long time. I know they re-released it on Xbox a while back, but I played it at that point. I remember thinking, woof, this game shows its age. But great concept, you know, photography, all that fun stuff. And I have high hopes for the sequel. And I'm glad Michel Ancel is working on it because he's a visionary guy. Christian, what do you think about this?
We're in a weird place where you can announce games. To some extent, I agree with Sean with how Ubisoft's been doing things recently. This kind of falls into that. I also think that I think they can do this now, and then when they do it on stage at E3 next year, if they do it, or, you know, whenever it is, 2 years, and they do it with like a sizable showing, it will still get that holy crap, you know, bomb moment. I don't think you need to come out with the unveil and the gameplay at the same time. I think if they do this now, we get a little trickle between now and whenever they're ready to show it, and then you're at Ubisoft's press conference and the lights go dark and like you hear like the camera click and then it comes up and you're in Beyond Good and Evil 2, I think people will go pretty crazy. And then like someone's on stage playing it, you can still have that bombastic moment if you want.
Oh yeah, and let's not kid ourselves here. This is going to go through the Ubisoft factory, which means it's going to feel, it'll be Beyond Good and Evil, but it's going to feel a lot like Watch Dogs, a lot like Far Cry, a lot like Assassin's Creed. I do believe there was some leaked, like pre-alpha test footage years ago, and it sure looked like Assassin's Creed at the time.
Oh man,
like, it was kind of this open worldy sort of feeling chase sequence from what I recall. I don't believe it was part of the actual game what it's going to be, but at the time when they were doing testing, I think that's what it looked like. So,
and you can hack cameras, and you can take pictures with the hacked cameras, and then your pig.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. It's kind of like when you're watching TV, which I don't even have cable at this point. But when I visiting someone who's older and they still have cable and I'm flipping through channels, it's like there's 100 different crime procedural shows. And so it's just like, what's your take on the crime procedural show that's a little bit different than the other one? It's like Ubisoft has a certain feeling to a lot of their games, and it's just all these different properties. What's their take on that particular formula?
I totally agree. Great zing from Datipi in the chat. He says, feel like Watch Dogs? You mean unfinished? Ouch.
Dang.
All right, let's talk about games we have played. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, Casper. If you have been staying up at night wondering what happened to Beyond Good and Evil 2, may I suggest a way to get better sleep? First of all, don't think about Beyond Good and Evil 2. But secondly, upgrade your mattress. Casper is a sleep brand that created the one perfect mattress sold directly to consumers. So basically what happens here is most of the time when you want to buy a mattress, you go to the store, a big warehouse store. You walk in, you get pestered by salespeople. Maybe you lay on a couple of mattresses. You go, oh, that feels all right. And you spend thousands of dollars on a mattress. You bring it home, and then you're stuck with that mattress forever. Casper broke the mold and is changing the way you deal with buying a mattress. First of all, most of us, the mattress we're sleeping on, we've held on to way too long. This happened to me. I was on a mattress that I used in college, and it was well past its day, and I would wake up sore.
You're still sleeping on a mattress from college? There hasn't been a mattress for college in these towns for 200 years.
Yeah, listen to the old lady that lives in the shoe. She knows what she's talking about. The thing is, we hold on to these mattresses because we don't understand. I woke up sore and out of sorts, and I didn't understand why. Then I got a new mattress, and I felt so much better. And Casper is making it easy to get a new mattress. No longer do you have to go into the store. You just buy it online. And no longer do you have to make your decision in a few minutes with a pesky salesperson. You can buy a mattress for a fraction of the price that you would at one of these big warehouse stores. We're talking, you know, like in the hundreds of dollars rather than the thousands of dollars. They send it directly to your house. It comes in a really cool package. It unfurls. It fills up on its own. It's really simple. It's got a neat little opener, fastener thing that it comes with. And then you can sleep on it for 100 nights before you have to make your decision whether you want to keep it or not. It is a completely risk-free 100-night trial where you get to make sure you like it. If night 37, you're like, you know what? I don't really like this. All you got to do is let them know. They come and they pick it up and they take it away from you and you get your money back. That's pretty amazing. They're so confident with their product. And chances are you're going to love it. You're going to realize that you've been sleeping on the same mattress for far too long. We've had people on the show talk about how much they've loved Casper. And the best part is we're going to hook you up. We're going to get you $50 off your first order at Casper. All you got to do is go to casper.com/DLC. Use the promo code DLC when you check out, and you'll get $50 off your purchase. These are mattresses that are made in America. Time Magazine named it one of their best inventions of 2015. These are springy latex supportive memory foams. It is obsessively engineered. I think you're going to dig it. Go to Casper.com, CASPER.com/DLC. Use that promo code DLC when you check out. Get yourself $50 off. Upgrade your sleep. And then you can, sleep soundly and worry about other things. It's much better. All right. Let us now go to the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. We're in it now, guys. It is the fall. It means the big releases are hitting hot and heavy. Man, what a massive week. I've been playing a lot of stuff. I see that you guys have as well. Where should we start, Sean? What would you like to start with?
Oh, you gotta start with Gears of War 4.
Yeah.
Gears of 4.
Gears of for War.
For War. 4 never changes. and actually, that's kind of true with Gears of War 4. War does kind of never change. It's got some new enemies, and it moves a little faster, but boy, is it ever a lot like the first three.
Well, here's my experience. I finished the campaign. I see that you did too. I felt like the first two acts of that game, I was like, oh my God, this is my favorite Gears of War. I cannot believe how much fun and how many new things there are. And it feels like a sci-fi world. They've really expanded it and it has all these new interesting nooks and crannies and oh my gosh. And then acts 3 and 4 come along and it's like, oh, this could be from any Gears of War game. Literally any of them.
Oh yeah. And Gears of War 4 is, to be upfront, I really enjoyed playing it. I played through the whole campaign co-op. We had a great time. We did. We were not there to take it very, very seriously.
What did you play on? Sorry,
I played on the PC.
Jeff?
So
I played on Xbox One.
Cool.
Ugh, lame.
well, I want to hear comparisons later. But I just wanted to let people know.
Okay. No, I'm playing on the PC. I played it with a controller, although it does support mouse and keyboard as well. I think I was hoping it was going to be a little bit more different than it was. To some degree, I really enjoyed it for what it was. I feel like in broad strokes, it's a faster game than the last three Gears were. It's got a little bit more movement to it. They certainly flush you out of cover much more readily. I never stayed behind cover for more than probably on average like 10 seconds or less, because there's always enemies that are jumping over the cover, or they're always throwing grenades or flushing you out in all these different ways. So they really keep you moving in this one, which I think is really good.
Well, there's also that new thing where one of the biggest features of cover in the middle part of the game is an enemy and it can explode and release enemies out of it. So you can't just hang out in the organic cover that is very prevalent through the middle of the game, because it'll explode and then bad guys shoot out. I thought that was pretty clever, actually.
I thought that was amazing. I thought that was great. I love that. I love the emergence holes aspect of, if you can blow that hole, if you have a grenade and you can get it into the hole in time, you'll prevent enemies from spawning in. Right. It'll run out eventually, but I like that you could cut
that. That's
that
a classic Gears of War thing, right?
Which is emergence. Great. It had a really nice mix. I think Gears of War 4 overall feels very aware of other video games. You know, Rod Ferguson is the director on this one. And he's the kind of guy who can, he delivers the milk. Like he can really execute on ideas very well, but I don't necessarily think that there's a lot of newness here. There's certainly new enemies. And like I said, it moves a lot faster. And it never overstayed its welcome on any given type of enemy or any given type of gameplay. Like I really felt like they did a good job of, in terms of that flow, in this case for me, a 6.5 hour campaign. I feel like it did a good job of changing things up and keeping it fresh, jumping between these horde mode style defend this area missions and walking through shooting locusts style kind of missions we're used to. But also these new enemies like the robots and stuff, really mixing it up. I felt like they did a pretty good job with their pacing.
You know, I agree with that. I felt like the middle section just lagged a little bit too much for me. And I don't want to be spoilery about it, but the first two acts feel like a sci-fi game and the second two acts feel like a horror game. And I guess I just prefer the sci-fi game over the horror game. And the fifth act is super fun. The fifth act, again, no spoilers, but it kind of does that Half-Life 2 thing where you've been frustrated by a bunch of these big bad enemies for a long time, and now we just gave you something that makes you super OP, and you get to have fun getting revenge on all those enemies that have given you a hard time. And it's a blast. It's such a satisfying ending to the game, and really a cool thing that you've never done in the Gears of War franchise before. But I just felt like all of the fun momentum that you get in the beginning, and there's all these really wild, cool ideas from a sci-fi perspective. Like, there's this one character that basically is a robot body that has like a FaceTime, like Skype call being projected on the top of it, which is such a cool idea, such a very neat concept. And there's this like running joke where it keeps getting destroyed.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah.
It's so good. And yet nothing really ever comes of that. There's no, the game ends very abruptly. Nothing is really ever concluded in a satisfying way. It feels like a setup for the next game, but the whole, like, the whole first two acts feel like you're leading to something, and then it feels like this massive detour in the middle where you have to go save a character. But that's the whole game. Like, the whole game is let's go save this character, but that felt like the thing we were doing instead of the big mission that we were on. And it felt like, okay, as soon as we're done saving this person, we'll get back to what we were doing before. But they never get back to what they were doing before. Game just ends. And I found that very frustrating.
Yeah, it was basically save other character as a sort of MacGuffin sort of thing. So, and if it wasn't one character, it was a different character. And they're very careful to keep repeating to you why you're moving. It goes back to that old school video game thing, which Gears has always done, of we need to put you through these levels we've made. We need to have a story reason to do so. So you need to go save this person. Here's your next set piece.
Right.
And I think that they do a better job of injecting humor.
For sure.
Giving the characters a little bit more nuance, a little bit different. Especially because it's not like a spoiler to say that Marcus Fenix is in this. He's been in all the marketing and stuff like that too, right? So he is in this game in some capacity. So when you him juxtaposed with these new characters they've introduced is pretty funny.
It's basically if Marcus Fenix got to hang out with Nathan Drake for a while.
Pretty much. And the lead character JD sounds so much like Nathan Drake. I had to look it up to make sure he wasn't Nolan North. Which he wasn't. So
I was shocked because I thought he was.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think people are learning. They need to learn that voice if they want to have a successful voice acting career.
I guess so.
Basically.
What I agree with you is that I think the game reminds me why I love this franchise. And it's been a while since I played a Gears game through. And it's like, oh yeah, this is a very fun shooter. Yes, it has all the same problems that Gears of War has always had, which is all the enemies are massive bullet sponges. You're kind of doing the same things over and over, but the weapons are super fun. I mean, I think the torque bow is like top five weapon in a video game for me ever.
Yes.
And I love the torque bow, but there's also some really fun new weapons that they introduce here that have really interesting mechanics, and it's just a blast to do the active reload like that. I don't know why more games haven't just stolen that, because it really does make it more fun to be in a firefight and feel like, oh yeah, I just nailed that active reload. I get a bonus now to my next few shots if I do them quickly. Just the pure mechanics of Gears, the chunkiness of that world, all of it reminded me, oh yeah, I really dig this franchise.
Yeah, they didn't screw that up. And the active reload, just that risk-reward mechanic being built into something so automatic and reflexive is...
Yeah.
It continues to be brilliant. And all the things that you liked about Gears is still here. I don't feel like I can't think of a single step back. I can't think of a single misstep in terms of what came before. I think I would have liked to have seen a few more steps forward. And like you say, the story feels like the first and second acts of a three-act play.
Right.
Like it does not, it feels small. And it feels like the beginning of a whole new thing. And so it kind of leaves you feeling a little bit unsatisfied at the end in terms of the story and how things come together and how things end. But as an experience of just sitting down with a buddy and playing co-op all the way through, it's a blast. Like, it's so silly and fun and bombastic and pretty.
Yeah,
it's
very so pretty.
We can talk about I can talk a little bit about the PC port aspect of it. I wouldn't even call it a port. This feels like a PC game. The options in the menu options for graphics, unlike say Mafia 3, the menu options are very robust. The game runs really, really well. I could almost run it at 4K, 60 frames a second. I could almost get it there without dropping any details. It runs really, really well. And that's a huge departure for Microsoft, because so many of their Xbox One PC releases have been bad. And this one has been much, much better for that. So they did a really good job with the PC aspect of it. And it runs wonderfully. I've been playing it 1440p on my 42-inch screen with all the bells and whistles. And it's been just gorgeous to wander around. And some of the environments, some of the some of the level design, it feels like Bioshock Infinite. Like some of them, you could tell Ferguson was at Irrational for a little while helping them finish up Bioshock, because some of these levels do feel, have the sort of like, I'm like, oh, this is the Bioshock level. Like this is the Bioshock town part. Yeah. And, you know, it had a lot of elements that I felt like were just shamelessly pulled from other games to good effect for the most part.
Well, I definitely agree that the game is gorgeous. I mean, I was in awe, even on Xbox One. I thought it ran very smoothly. It looked great on my big TV. I was constantly just stopping and looking around with the camera because the lighting is so gorgeous. And they do these crazy new wind effects. Now you get into these crazy wind storms and, you know, things are blowing around and all the vegetation is moving. And when you shoot an enemy, he gets swept up by the wind as well. It's all just so incredible looking. But again, those third and fourth acts, you're just going through tunnels. You're just going through, like you said, sort of Bioshocky, you know, pipes and tunnels and things you've done in every video game. And it's only bugged me more this time because the game starts off with you in such interesting, vibrant, colorful outdoor environments. And then you have to do, I guess, the de rigueur Gears of War thing where you're kind of going down into the earth underneath the ground, into a mine, into a, you know, an old abandoned place where humans used to build crazy machines. And it's like all the stuff you do in video games all the time. You're trying to turn the power on to power the elevator.
Like there's so many things in this game that need electricity, but yeah. Don't. And so you need to go somewhere and pull a thing. Like, yeah. There's just so many times where they need power and they don't have it.
It's annoying. And especially because that beginning section where you're getting a fleshed out version of what the world of Gears of War is like. We've seen this war torn subterranean quest to defeat the Locusts in three games. Right. And it was cool. But the way this game starts, where you're going to these sort of rural towns and seeing, you know, this wooden city that's built in this very futuristic, you know, narrative space. I was like, oh, that's a really cool juxtaposition. And they're doing really smart things with that. And then it just completely abandoned for two acts. And it just felt like a waste. I don't know. Maybe I'm making a bigger deal about that than I should, because the game is really fun. But
it's really fun. I think my last word on it would be just that Gears of War 4 is a game that doesn't need to exist. the trilogy covered everything it needed to. They go out of their way to the opening tutorial areas in Gears of War 4 are basically going back in time and playing these events. And if you've never played Gears of War 1, 2, and 3, or it's been a long time, they're almost meaningless anyway. Like they don't make any sense. In fact, a lot of in Gears of War 4, they hand wave, truncate, and give you the short versions of a lot of plot points. And you don't really have a good, strong sense of what's going on and why you're doing things all the time. And so it does suffer from, how do we justify this product? How do we justify this new entry into this world? How do we make it feel different? And I think they make a strong play by having your main characters like rolling into this big futuristic town on a horse-drawn carriage, basically. And I'm like, oh, this is like a new sort of look for this world. Yeah. And then they, like you say, like they kind of let that fall to the wayside eventually. So there's elements there. And I think that I feel like they hone a little too close to what came before, and they didn't do enough to really make this stand out as its own thing. So it's more Gears. You're going to feel right at home in it, but it's not going to feel like there's some elements in here where I felt like I was entering into a Dead Space level. Right. And yeah, I'm like, oh, this would be really interesting to play a, like Gears is kind of like Dead Space, but faster anyway. It'd be really interesting to get into some survival horror kind of mechanics for a little while where you don't have a lot of ammo, where you're trying to survive against a few enemies in a place that's abandoned and probably needs power because they all do. And like there's some really cool things they could do that they didn't really get into. So I'd love to see them explore that some more, but I don't know if they can really get too far from what makes the series so popular.
I'm jealous that you played it all through co-op because the game feels designed for co-op. I did not. No, I played it solo.
Oh my God. I would not want to play the single player. The AI is fine, but it's very good co-op.
One of the things they do very, very smartly is that, and I think this should be the standard for any game like this, any game that has a mechanic where if I go down, I need to be revived by my teammates, The AI knows that if I go down, it should abandon anything it's doing and run to me to revive me immediately. That it becomes the only thing it should do. It should not shoot another bullet until I am revived. And it does that. And I think that's really to their credit, because I've died in too many games waiting for my stupid AI teammate to realize I should be revived.
I think if you're playing single player, they should give you an option when you're down to just take control of one of the other characters.
I think that's
a
great idea.
They should just let you jump over there, you know, something like that. Because the AI was basically our medic in co-op. Like one of us would go down, we're like, it's okay, he'll come get us in a second. You know, keep doing what you're doing. And it worked out pretty well for the most part. And maybe I'm just misremembering. I feel like I went down faster in Gears of War 4 than I did in the last games. I feel like you drop faster, but you also revive faster. Yeah. So it feels like I'm a little bit weaker, but I'm also quicker to get back into it if I do get downed.
Even like the boss battles, they just seem made for co-op. Like one person should be doing one thing while somebody else is doing another thing. Yep. What did you think of the like mini horde mode, mini tower defense levels that were in the campaign?
I think they needed something to bridge to that multiplayer horde mode. That's obviously become such a big part of the Gears series. So I thought it was a good way to those aspects felt like tutorials for horde mode. They didn't feel like they felt a little bit contrived and a little bit shoehorned in to the story. But like I said, as a change of pace sort of mechanic, I thought it was fine.
Awesome. They also have tons of you know, extra content. There's like a whole card system that basically works a lot like the, Counter-Strike skin swaps that we've derided on the show over and over. Basically, you can unlock these packs of cards that give you skins for your characters and skins for your looks for your thing. That's a collectible aspect. I think it's kind of interesting. Lots in this package. Again, gorgeous. I recommend it. I think it's cool. As you said, it kind of doesn't need to exist, but it's real fun, especially if you can play with a friend, evidently.
So I have a couple of questions. One, what difficulty did you guys play the campaign on?
Normal.
Normal.
Two, I'm trying to think which one's requires a longer answer. Well, let's go in this order. Two, I believe I'm correct in saying you guys both got review copies of the game, but regular folk can play it if they buy the $100 or whatever it is. And this is not the first game to do this. Certainly Forza did it, where if you bought the, whatever they called it, Ultimate Edition, you got it early as well. I think Battlefield 1 is doing something similar. So it has happened enough now that I can call it a pattern or trend. What do you guys think? Here's a game that I am excited about. I was playing Gears 1 Remastered or Ultimate Edition again last week to like get myself hyped for it. And I got numerous tweets and people on Twitch being like, if you're so hyped for it, why aren't you playing it already? And I'm like, I'm hyped for it, but I'm not $130 hyped for it. It's weird. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Sean.
No, it's fine. So the Ultimate Edition, I believe, is $100 US.
Yeah, $99.
Am I right about that?
That's correct.
So it's $100 US. It includes the season pass, which I'm actually very much against season passes in general, because games don't actually tell you what's in them a lot of the time. And I don't think it's really good to be buying stuff before you even know what you're buying. So that's one aspect of it. Generally speaking, like there's only so many ways to make something feel more valuable, and access is just one of them. Early access to things is just one of those things. It comes hand in hand with alphas and betas becoming part of this whole pre-order scheme to get people in, because they're playing against your impatience. And just like these card systems are there to give you these little dopamine hits, so you'll keep playing once you do have the game. It'll keep you in there. So, it's human nature stuff. I can't blame them for doing it, because obviously we're buying it. But I don't generally think it's a great idea to spend $100 on a game just if your only motivation is that you want to play it 3 days early.
I agree. I they wouldn't do it if nobody bought it, though. So people clearly do think that value translates for them. And I guess more power to them. But, I certainly would never have spent the money to play it early. I really wouldn't have. I can wait. I can be patient.
And then last question. This game is reviewing well. It sounds like both of you, you know, would give it a good score if you were forced to put a score on it as well, even though you had some reservations about the game. It seems like generally it's both, coming from both of you, it's a recommend. But I found that the reviews I've read and listening to both of you talk, it seems like more people, reviewers, a bigger critique of this game is kind of what you guys spent time on too. It doesn't need to exist. It's more of the same. It feels like a Gears game, and that feels like it's a knock that people are making against the game. But as someone who is a huge Uncharted fan, that game also reviewed very well, Uncharted 4, and I feel like very few people brought that up as a knock against that game, or Forza Horizon 3. I love that game. It is definitely, and it's reviewing very well as well. It is definitely more Forza Horizon. Like, at no point is it, and now you're controlling a space shuttle, and you just landed on Mars, right? Like, it's what you get. And I'm curious why you guys think Gears 4 is kind of getting knocked for this, or maybe the other games did too, and I just didn't notice because I was like, I don't care, I love these games. It's more of those, perfect. But to me, it seems like Gears 4 is taking a hit for this, whereas other big franchises recently have not.
Well, I think that TV shows that are really popular and have seasons 4, 5, 6, 7, and remain popular until they finish, like say Breaking Bad or something like that. I don't think by season 3 of Breaking Bad you're like, ugh, more Breaking Bad. It's like you're into the story, so you want to see where it goes. Uncharted is a very story heavy game. Like, obviously there's good gameplay there and they make little improvements, but Uncharted is, you're there for the characters, the story, to see what happens next, to watch this next episode. Arguably Uncharted 4 didn't need to exist either, but at least there was this new developments, new characters, new story things. Gears doesn't prioritize that. Gears uses the story as a way to lubricate the levels, to keep pushing you forward. So I think that's, to me, that's where that gap is that I'm not really interested in where the story is going in Gears. So I kind of question as to whether or not I need another one of these things because I've played this gameplay a lot already.
Yeah, I think he makes a good point, and I agree with that. It's not even just lubricating the levels, it's lubricating just the firefights. Like, this game is all about firefights, and it gives them to you all the time. You're constantly in another firefight. It does not let up. In fact, the game sort of starts making jokes about it. Like, the guys are like, hey, you think we'll be able to get through here without fighting anything? No. You know, they're constantly referencing that. And, you know, at a certain point, it's like somebody in the Gears universe said, hey, guys, guess what? I can put a chainsaw on this gun. Oh, that's amazing. Really, that's really, really cool. Yeah, yeah. The downside is you need to shoot something 400 times in order for it to die. But there's a chainsaw on your gun. It's a really very not powerful gun, but there's a chainsaw on it. I mean, you literally, everything's a sponge in this game, especially if you're using the Lancer. Whew. 300 bullets into something before it dies.
Oh, yeah. I almost want to say the bullet sponge's effect is more pronounced in this one with all the different boss enemies. And the bullet sponge effect is manageable if enemies react to being shot.
Right.
Right. And a lot of these enemies do not look like they're being hurt in any way. And you have no idea if you're getting good hits or not. And that makes the whole bullet sponge thing feel kind of gross for sure.
Yeah. Let's move on. Lots of other games came out, big AAA games. Let's talk about Mafia 3, because all three of us have played Mafia 3. Christian, let's start with you. What's your how much have you played? What are you playing it on? And what's your take?
I'm playing on PS4. I'm maybe 3 to 4 hours in, so not tons. Not tons and tons of it. I know it's a large open world game.
Oh, by the way, real quick, the chat room is really excited about Forza Horizon Mars.
Well, so yeah, I mean, obviously.
You can make that happen. It would be great.
I pitched it so that when they release it next year, they have to pay me money because it's clearly the best idea in gaming. explore the open roads on Mars? Yeah, incredible. Mafia 3, I streamed the first hour of it, or like my first hour 20, which you can find on my Twitch and on my YouTube to see like live reaction, how I was feeling about it. I've now spent more time thinking about it. Things I like about the game. I like the protagonist. I like that it's in a fictional version of New Orleans, but it's in a very real America, in a very real part of our history. I think a lot of times, you know, you have games like Gears of War that, or even Deus Ex, Mankind Divided, that create this metaphor for stuff that's happening in our real world. And our country, and every country kind of in the world, has had some really tumultuous periods. And I like that Mafia 3 isn't shying away from it or creating fictional. It takes place in Lesterica in the city of Blue Lorelands. Like, it, you know, it kind of splits the difference between the two. And I like that you're playing this morality gray zone character in a city that is a morality gray zone city, in a time in our country where it was a morality gray zone country, and they lean into all of that. I think it's cool, and I admire them for what they're trying to do. That said, I think they missed that mark. From what I've read about the game and seen about the game, and what I've played the game, more than they hit it, unfortunately. I know for me, the first time the N word was dropped, it was kind of just like, I mean, I know it existed in the world then, but yeah, woo, you're just, I feel like you were just saying it to say it. It's kind of like at a comedy show, sometimes you'll see a host come up and just be very vulgar to set the stage for other comics. People will leave the show being like, man, that host was vulgar. The other guys were great, but the other guys were also vulgar. It just didn't punch you in the face as hard. And so I feel like it's a little loose with it in times when you're just like roaming the streets and people are like, inward, inward, inward. It's like one of the 20 sayings that people say. And I'm just like, oh, okay. But all that stuff aside, the actual gameplay itself, I wish this story existed in a non-open world game. I've talked on this show before about how I'm not the largest open world gameplay fan. I wish this narrative was a little more condensed or a little more straightforward. I think it suffers from the open world tendency of, because the world is so big, they're not able to really highlight what you have to do. So everything is constantly prompted. Like, you go to your apartment and it's like telling you, taking up a third or a fifth of the top of the screen, pick up your gear, talk to Mike, go to the bar, leave Sammy's. Like, literally, it's like, leave Sammy's. It's like, okay, I guess I'll leave. Get in the car. Drive over here. And it's because you don't have that. It's not guided, right? It's not Gears of War 4 where you have a hallway to run down and this thing saying, we got to go kill this thing. It's, you have this world to play in, and they're not showing you the way with level design as much, because the level is this huge city. So I think the story gets hit for that. And then the combat and the driving and everything, it feels like it's very admirable what I think this team did, but I think it to me, it appears like it needs, I don't know how long game development really takes, but another 5 months, another 2 months of development. Everything feels just a little off to me. Like, you hit a jump in your car and like there's no weight to it. It is kind of like, I see my car go up and then come down. It's also an unfair comparison that I'm playing this in concert with Forza Horizon 3, which is such incredible driving. And now I'm like also driving around an open city and I'm just like, yeah, this driving is sucks. And then the shooting's the same way, where like it makes a cool like noise when you hit people. But I think, like you guys were saying, for Gears, I guess it doesn't seem like they don't react per se when I'm hitting them. My reticle doesn't change in any way, shape, or form to let me know if I'm on the character, which I feel like has kind of become a standard now. It like turns red or becomes tighter, so I sometimes don't know if I'm hitting them or not. And then I've seen some really cool gifs that make the combat look awesome, where like, you know, he runs into a room, fires two shots, takes cover, jumps over cover, flanks around a guy, punches a guy, and I'm like, that looks awesome. And then I play the game and that's not how it is for me. It's like, ping ping, sit here, oh, run over here, ping ping, run away. But overall, I think it's ambitious and cool and something that should be experienced. I think it's a wait for Black Friday. I don't think you need to rush out and play this game. What about you guys?
Sean?
Well, boy, there's a lot to unpack there. Yeah. Let's see here. In terms
I was
of the
very
race,
quiet. All of Gears 4, I had a lot to say.
No, I appreciate that. I think that in terms of the race stuff, which I think is really important to talk about, because they went out of their way. In the same way that Assassin's Creed opens with, hey, there's people from all sorts of cultures and nations working on this game, and it's all a work of fiction, blah, blah, blah. The developers of Mafia 3 put up a notice when you first launched the game, like saying, hey, we're going to be looking at this stuff. You're going to be hearing some stuff. And we felt like we'd be doing a disservice to pretend none of this ever happened, especially if you're going to be playing a person of color. So they really do seem to indicate that they're taking it seriously, and they want you to know that they're not trying to be flippant with it. Whether or not they were succeeding, I think, is going to be pretty subjective. My experience was that in my experience with the criticism around the N-word and the way the game plays out is that I've played a lot of games that have the N-word. Like when I'm playing GTA, well, most of the GTAs, there's a lot of N-word thrown around, but it's thrown around within people of the culture, generally speaking. It's from it's black people saying it to each other. What we're not used to is having that epitaph being thrown at us as players in a way that's not convivial, like in a way that's right. not like establishing that we have a relationship and we know each other. It's actually people telling me to go away and I don't like you because right. of the color of your skin. And I think that's a really hard thing and a very new thing for a gamer to experience. Most games do not go for this. And so I think that it makes for a very, I think it's going to take a long time to chew on and to settle in with. I think I don't know how I feel about it yet. I can say that like there's in Mafia 3, there's an option to go, you can go into the options and you can choose whether your takedowns are going to be lethal or non-lethal. And there's a mission early on where you're fighting a bunch of white supremacists. And the way they talk to you and the way they treat other black people in the game and stuff, I like had a moment where I stopped and I paused the game because I'm a non-lethal guy. Like, you know, every game I play and I'm like, nope, I went in, changed it to lethal for that mission.
Wow.
Because I like in that, like I had a really visceral response to it. As an empathy engine, as well, not really a 100% empathy, obviously, there's a difference between experiencing it in a game and actually living with it. But as something to kind of shake up your perspective and really have to face it in a small way like this, I think is really valuable and I think it's really important. What I'll be interested to see is how it maintains. I've played about 4 hours. I've been playing it on the PC. And I'm just getting to that point where it's starting to break into that open world. It's getting out of there. Okay, go here now. You're learning. Go here, do this. Like they're starting to open it up now and starting to give me more autonomy in terms of what I'm going to do next. So I'll be interested to see if this was just a really front-loaded 4 hours or if they're going to continue to explore this as the game progresses.
Well, sadly, I think that's where the game falls apart, for me at least. And I think what you have said is so spot on and so well-spoken. I think it's hard for me to criticize this game because so few games are as ambitious narratively and subject matter wise as this. And I want to congratulate that. I want to support that. And I want more games to be that bold and courageous and feel like those kinds of stories can be told and can be successful in a video game world. They don't all have to be Gears of War. You know, it can actually be about something. And the way this game presents its story, you know, I started this and I was like, oh my God, what if Grand Theft Auto was written by mature humans instead of a bunch of 13-year-old boys? That's what this game is like. What if actual grown-ups wrote these things? Because it is presented in a really interesting way. It's all kind of flashbacks, and we're seeing, you know, this case in retrospect, and it feels very cinematic and almost like, you know, an episode or like a Goodfellas type situation.
Or it also feels like a documentary. Like, the way they cut between real footage, the way they talk about your character, like he's this force of nature, like he's this person who came into the scene and just like a hurricane just blew everything apart and restructured the entire crime organizations. And the way they build that up before you even get in, before you even start doing things, makes your character feel less like a, you know, like a new kid in the mob. He's like, yes, sir, right away. And I'll just do whatever you tell me to do. This guy has like he feels powerful.
Yeah, I agree.
Agency. And the game actually, the way they structure that and the way they have these talking heads talking about it in retrospect makes you really feel like you're in this sort of almost mythical story rather than just something that's happening in real time.
Right. And it's impressive. I mean, there was the very first thing I did in this game, you start in this, you know, in the middle of this mission, and I walked into a room and there's a person tied up to a chair, and I walked up to him and it said, press B. And I was like, okay, I'll press B. I pressed B and I murdered him. I shot him in the face. I was like, oh, I didn't mean to press B that way. I didn't know that that's what B was going to do. And it really affected me. And because of the context, the way that the game had brought me into this world, and it felt so grounded, as you said, they use actual newsreel footage and it felt like, oh my gosh, we're talking about civil unrest and the 60s and all of the things that post Vietnam War Americans were dealing with, and all of that stuff just felt like, oh my gosh, I'm ready to have this really nuanced, interesting experience. And then I'm literally just murdering thousands of people. I mean, the first few missions, you just go on a massive killing spree. And the whole game is that. The whole game is murder every part of the mob.
Well, that's what, like, I'm not as deep into it as you are, but that, I mean, even early on as, you know, Sean, I think where you're at or will be soon, when it starts opening up, you know, I kind of mainline game. So it opened up and it's like, you can go over here and make money. And I was like, no, dude, I'm cool. I want to see what this game's doing. And it does, it feels like, I feel like my character as they present him in the prologue, which is, I think, really well done. And like you said, it's like ESPN's 30 for 30 or something, like, or the OJ documentary, like the way they're weaving this tale. It's really compelling. It's why I want a tighter narrative. I want to just watch this thing almost. And then you get out there and I feel like I have all these, I have motivations to do what I'm doing, but not how I'm doing it. Right. I feel like my character could be smarter, would be more subtle, and maybe it's the way I'm playing him. I don't think it becomes an option though, but it's just like, yeah, okay, everything's gonna burn, and you,
well,
just
I think the thing that I'm trying to get to is this, again, we are slammed up into the convention of video game, slammed up against the ambition of narrative. And we talk about, you know, this ludonarrative dissonance and all that stuff. But I think it's even more pronounced here because the game itself, it feels so GTA from, you know, 2002 or whatever. It really bums me out. I wish they had just stuck to what actually the first Mafia was, which is basically just an adventure game in an open world setting. And all of the GTA-esque game stuff is by far less interesting than what the game is trying to do narratively. And I it's like, oh, here's this really cool story, amazingly acted. The voice acting in this game is tremendous.
And the face animation. I think some of the graphics on PS4 are kind of lousy, like the textures, but those cutscenes or the close-ups on faces, it's like L.A. Noir. Like,
yeah.
They could make L.A. Noir 2 with this tech.
It is... all the presentation of those scenes, how they're directed, how they're acted, all that stuff is so high quality. And I feel like I'm watching this really amazing film or TV show. Excuse me. And then I'm thrust into gameplay that feels out of date, blunt, really no nuance to it at all. Very rote.
I disagree with that. I think that the gameplay in Mafia 3 is actually quite good. Mafia 2, for example, actually had really good gunplay. And Mafia 3, I think, builds on that to some degree. I think their approach to stealth is actually quite good, especially for an open world game. I find myself doing most missions stealthily. I find myself actually not just gunning everybody down. I'm doing a lot of sneaking around and choking people, which... I have a certain bias. I really enjoy sneaking around and choking people in video games. It's something I'll do if I'm given the option to. I feel like there's a lot of that there. And I think that they've got a good mix of open shooting, cover-based mechanics. It does feel a bit rote in the sense that it's an open world third-person shooting game. So it does feel like pretty much all the other ones, but I don't think they do it poorly. I don't think it's a step back. I feel like it's just a fairly well-executed version of something we've done a lot in the last, let's say, 10 years.
I think it's missing... I want to split the difference between you two. I think it has that, but it's missing the polish that a Rockstar game often has, or that some of the finer versions of these games come with. It's like, oh, the thing is there, but something, like, whether for me it's like the reticle not changing or like the weight of the car not feeling right. It's like all the stuff is there, but it's not quite polished to a shine that makes it all come together.
Yeah,
I'm curious with the car driving. Do you play regular or simulated?
I tried both. I've defaulted back to regulator. I defaulted back to regular, but I played with simulated some. That didn't make it more fun.
No, simulated makes it more drifty and spinny and squealy. In fact, I found the simulated driving model made the game feel actually a little bit more like Driver. Huh. You remember Driver from the PlayStation or PlayStation 2? I think it was PlayStation 2. It kind of makes me feel like the car feels a little bit out of control, but not in necessarily an unfun way. Like, I've been playing Forza as well, and I found Mafia 3's driving to be fine. Like, again, like, most of the gameplay stuff in it, I haven't come out feeling like, oh, they're doing this really poorly. I just kind of come out feeling like, yeah, it's an open world game, and this is what you get. And the stealth's pretty good. So, you know what? For what it's doing, I think it does it
decently. I agree that the stealth for me is the most fun part, and it's kind of something you don't really get in a GTA game. So I think it's a cool addition, and the way you can go about it is neat. I should check the options about non-lethal kills, because I just felt like I was murdering everybody.
But oh, no. Just non-lethal. You will choke a lot of people out. You will not stab them.
The lethal kills
are genuinely make me feel very squeamish. It's brutal. That knife.
Oh, it is. It's, yeah. But that's not even really the biggest part. The chat room is going crazy about me criticizing the murder aspect. And I understand we're in a video game. It's a shooter. You shoot people. That's what you do. I just felt like it is the same, in the kind of the same criticism we had for Gears of War. It's the same thing that I did in GTA 3, right? There's nothing more interesting to do in this open world than what you do in this game. And I guess it's just because that's the genre we're working in here, is a very specific template for what open world crime game is. And, you know, when the first Mafia came out, I remember it very well. GTA was not available on PC. And so this was like our GTA. It was PC players. It was like, oh, we get a GTA type game. And I know it's still sort of following in those footsteps of Grand Theft Auto, but I felt like as groundbreaking as they were trying to be from a narrative perspective, I just wanted there to be something more interesting happening in a gameplay perspective. And I don't think that the open world is taken advantage of in any interesting way. There's more different stuff to do in a GTA game than there is in this game. There's, I don't know, I was hoping for more.
That actually, Mafia, the original Mafia is one of my all times. Like, it's one of my all time favorites.
Yeah, if you can get past that first race car mission.
Oh God, I right? cheat my way through. That was brutal.
Brutal.
Nonetheless, like, in terms of its story and what it delivered for its time, it was very good. I do not think it would hold up well at all. And one of the main criticisms with Mafia 2 was that it was this huge open world with nothing to do in it but missions. Like, yeah. Just driving from one mission plot point to the next with right. nothing in between. So Mafia 3 seems to be trying to address that. Whether or not they're hitting the mark is I guess we'll have to see once we finish it up. But yeah, it's on some level, I feel like Mafia 3 gets dinged a bit because it's trying to be a more standard open world game amongst what's a very cool narrative, a way to deliver a narrative and some really interesting character work and camera work and voice acting, and a time and place that's also really interesting, and a banging soundtrack. Oh my God, soundtrack is so good.
Well, when you have the late 60s,
so much money on that.
When you have the late 60s to work with, you know, you got some really great music.
Really good.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not as down on the game as it sounds. I just wish it was better. I just wish it was more fun to play. It's as fun to play as it is to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I'll just mention real quick as far as the PC port goes. When 2K put it out, limited to 30 frames a second, crashing issues for some people. So basically a typical 2K PC release. So they put out a patch just this past week, or just like
yesterday,
like within 24 hours to unlock the frame rate, which does work. Nonetheless, like, I feel like compared to Gears of War 4, there's some muddy textures here and there. There's some stuff, like the way the skybox looks, the way the trees look, like it's definitely got a style to it. It's not necessarily a really hot looker when you're out in the open world. It's fine. But it's definitely not super amazing looking. But I was actually, when we were talking about like Infinite Warfare being so big, I looked. Mafia 3 is 46 gigs.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious now to go back through my games where I feel like they do high end resolutions and textures really well, and start to look at all these different game sizes, because I'm starting to wonder how big these games are getting and how much that has to do with the graphical fidelity.
I think the game looks really, really good on PC. I've been playing on PC as well. Overall, I was pretty impressed with how it looked. A lot of variety, really pretty city. You know, Norns is a pretty city. And I kept thinking, you know, I just had my son not too long ago. And I kept thinking, he's going to grow up in a world where this is like the worst video games will look. You know, are people even going to care about quote unquote good graphics? You know, like all of our generation, we're like, oh man, the game has really great graphics. That's just going to be expected. It's just not going to be any comment on how good the graphics are, because graphics will always have been good.
Well, I think the moment when games came out from, we're starting to see more and more games that are like really, really low on the graphical scale as an art choice.
Yeah.
Rather than as necessarily just a budgetary restriction, but actually as a way, because they want to convey something. I think that marked a shift in how we think about graphics, and all of a sudden something that doesn't necessarily look good is a choice, right, rather than a limitation.
It's art design now, not just art direction, yeah. All right. I know we're going super long. Let me just thank our second sponsor, Mack Weldon. You've heard me talk about Mack Weldon because I wear it. I'm wearing it right now. I'm sitting in my boxers doing the show. That's how I do things. That's how I do the show, is wearing my boxers. You don't need to know that, but now you do. And the good news is I'm wearing Mack Weldon's, so that means I'm probably super comfortable, probably smell pretty good. I can tell you that the underwear that they sell at Mack Weldon, antimicrobial. That means eliminates odor. That means smell pretty good. I'm gonna give myself a little sniff right now. Yep, smell pretty good. Also, they're super comfy. If I'm going to be anywhere where comfort is a factor, where I need to sit around a long time, I'm going to reach for my Mack Weldon underpants. They're better than whatever you're wearing right now. And we're going to give you 20% off of Mack Weldon. They do not just underwear, socks, shirts, your basics, basically your basics. And they're super comfy. They smell good. They're high-end, good quality basics. Everybody needs good underpants. You know, you can get your boxers, your briefs, your boxer briefs, your brief boxers. Anything you need, 20% off. All you got to do is go to mackweldon.com, mackweldon.com. Use our promo code DLC at checkout. Get you 20% off your order, and you can upgrade your underpants, your undershirts, your socks. Really slick socks, too. I got some Mack Weldon socks. They are nice. They're good looking. Those little details, people notice them. So go to mackweldon.com, use our promo code DLC, get yourself 20% off at checkout. Okay, guys, I want to hit on Paper Mario a little bit. Been playing that a bit because these massive releases are coming out, and the Wii U, I plugged it back in, guys. It still works. My Wii U still works. I was so pleased to find that out. And Color Splash, I've been a big Paper Mario fan for a long time. I love that Paper Mario aesthetic. I love that it's a thing. Like, it's such a weird, interesting Mario concept that they've run with. And I love the sort of Mario role-playing game and all of the combat in Paper Mario, that turn-based Japanese role-playing game style combat. So great. Color Splash takes it to a different place in that basically the bad guys in the Mario world or the shy guys or whatever they are, have been stealing color from the land, from the island, with straws. They just suck the color through straws, and it turns everything black and white. But luckily, Mario's hammer has been infused by a magic talking paint can to be able to spew paint on the things that he smacks with a hammer. But it's a finite amount of paint. You got to collect paint all around. You got to pick up little paint globules that fall out of stuff that you break. Pick up paint globules, fill your paint can hammer, and then smack black and white things until they have color, saving all of the toad people in the land. Sounds pretty conventional. Nothing weird about that at all. It's actually really fun. And my goodness, a high-definition Paper Mario looks so good. That crispness really just pops. The color and the crispness of the two-dimensional paper people and the paper world that you're in. Really clever ideas of the paper world and how things play. There's a sequence where like somebody bends the whole paper world into a crumple, and you have to uncrumple it basically by smacking it with your paint hammer. There's a lot to like. I mean, it's a Mario game, so you're going to be, you know, pushing A through tons of very slow scrolling text, but at least it's written in a clever way. Man, that is annoying to just A through text all the time. When are they going to get rid of that convention in Nintendo games? But again, at least it's written well, a little kind of cute, funny humor stuff. And the central mechanic of running around and smacking stuff with your paint hammer, because the way the paint just sort of spews everywhere out of your hammer, it's really, really satisfying on a very basic level of just like just drenching things in paint that comes shooting out of this hammer. The combat, though, which you do a lot of in this game, for some reason has been switched over to a card-based mechanic where you collect these cards that give you attacks. And I guess because they're still trying to justify the Wii U gamepad, what happens when you get into combat is your gamepad changes to a display of all the cards you have. You reach down with your finger, you select a card that is the attack that you want, a jump attack or a hammer attack or maybe a double jump attack or whatever. You select that card, you swipe up with that card. Now you've selected that card. Now you want to add paint to that card because most of the cards come black and white. Adding paint adds power to your attacks. So you press the card and hold down for as long as you want to add paint to the card. It's kind of unclear as to how much power paint, what's the power to paint ratio. But it basically, if you have paint, you're going to fill up the whole card. At least that's what I do. I guess there's some strategy in filling up partial paint, or if you only have enough paint to fill up partial. It's just not clear as to what benefit that gives you or not gives you. Anyway, you paint your card by holding down your finger, and then you flick the card forward to engage the attack. Then you look up at the screen, you see if it worked, see if it killed the guy. Push your A button to interact on the jumps, to time your jumps the way you've always done in Paper Mario. And then you're back to your Wii screen, selecting a card with your finger, swiping up to select that card, painting the card with your finger, pushing it, holding it down. Oh, sometimes you get pre-painted cards that you loot. But guess what? You still have to go through the step of going to the paint and selecting done painting. Even though it's pre-painted, there's no possibility that you would need to paint it. You still have to select done. And you flick it up to attack, back to the screen. It is so tedious, guys. It is so tedious to fight. And you do so much fighting. And it's all because they had this idea that you needed to use the Wii Pad. There's no need to use the Wii Pad for this. It doesn't add any fun. It doesn't add any functionality. It doesn't create a more interesting experience in any way. It's just an arbitrary use of a touchpad for no reason that extends the time it takes to do any attacks, any combat at all. And it's such a distraction and such a bummer to what is really a delightful gaming experience otherwise. But ugh, it's such a bummer.
Yeah, that's a huge bummer. The Paper Mario series sort of left me behind a long time ago. I just never felt like, at least looking at it, I never felt like it had the depth necessarily I was looking for. Do you feel like this is something that's being targeted at kids? Like, do you have a sense of an age group?
In the sense that all Nintendo games are targeted at kids, you know, I mean, it's very
relatively.
Yeah, it's very much that sort of all ages, just wholesome, silly, very light, that Nintendo thing where Mario games, the fiction is like, oh no, Mario, you got to get us out of here. You know, it's all that. Works for kids, but adults can have a little giggle as well, I guess. But mostly it's just get through the story so I can have fun looking at the colorful world, engaging and smacking stuff with my color hammer, which is really kind of fun. I like the game a lot, actually. It pops on my, you know, high-def TV. It looks so sharp and great. And the levels are really interesting. I mean, later on there's another touchscreen thing where you get like scissors that lets you cut out parts of the world and you just trace them with your finger on the touchpad because that's something you can do with a touchpad. It's all so shoehorned in. I guess kids enjoy that more than I would, but I think even kids would find it a little tedious. I don't know. That's Paper Mario. We're running a little long, but do you guys want to talk any about Forza 3?
John, have you played Forza 3 Horizon?
Yeah, I'm not a big Forza guy. I've played a lot of them, I should say. I skip every one or two. So Forza Horizon 3, I just, it was an impulse buy. In the sense that on impulse, I wanted to buy it, and it took me about 24 hours to figure out the Microsoft store so I could actually buy it and put it on my PC. Once I did actually get it on there and I played around with it, I'm really enjoying it. The main Forza games are too much of a simulation for me. And Horizon, I think, does strike a really nice balance where I feel like I'm playing a real racing game. I feel like I've got some real skill going on. And yet I can do wacky things. Like if it's an As a Crow Flies race, I can just cut across the field.
Yeah,
I really like that I can do that. I really enjoy that aspect of it. And I like the open world stuff. So it's been a nice listen to podcast chill out game for me. I couldn't really tell you like if the Audi or the BMW or like if they feel right or anything like that. I just pick a car based on what I think looks good, and then I go drive around in it more or less. And it actually works quite well for someone like me who's just barely skimming the surface of most racing games.
Yeah, all I want to add to it is, I mean, I still really enjoy the game. I just want to point out, I don't know if I'm a hypocrite is the right thing or not, but it's interesting how I oftentimes on this show talk about my distaste or my problems with open world games. And again, with Forza Horizon series and Forza Horizon 3, I'm totally comfortable having it be an open world game and like drive around the world and look for the dumb billboard to smash, which, you know, is just like any other collectible in any other open world game. And so people had been tweeting at me and asking me like, why do you like this but you don't like that one? They were doing it nicer than that. I don't know why I put negativity, but like, what about this makes you enjoy it? And I think it's the kind of going back to the No Man's Sky, why I like that. It's the lack of a real story or compelling narrative to like, it's not like, Christian, you need to open up this third festival or the world's going to explode. It's just like, hey, dude, when you get enough fans, come over to the Outback. We'll have a bigger party. And I'm like, cool, dope. I'm still having fun over here at this Surfer's Paradise, but I'll get to you.
Don't want pressure. You just don't want to be pressured.
Well, I don't want plot to make it feel like I need to do something. While instead, I'm like, cool, I will go save my son. But first, I'm going to get some XP for smashing this billboard that's hidden in this person's house. First, I'm going to smash their fence to get there. And then the other aspect of it that I enjoy is I like driving. I am a car guy. So it's more fun for me to explore this world and do dumb stuff in a Dodge Challenger Hellcat than it is a knight walking in a suit of armor. So like those are the things that keep me coming back to this game as, and I use it much like Sean does, as a chill out, listen to podcasts and just kind of hang out kind of game, but still loving it.
Cool. All right, let's move on. I know we're running long, but I want to get to a little bit of VR talk. I always love having you on the show, Sean, because you are in the VR world with me. You've got your Vive. We've talked about it at length. What are you playing lately?
The only thing I've gotten to lately, like I said, I've been in sort of this cool down lull with the Vive, just because a lot of projects I'm really interested in are still baking. They got these, they're updating almost on the daily. And at some point I was like, okay, like, I'm actually quite busy with my day job and everything else too, so I've just decided to let things bake for a while, especially since we have all these big AAA games coming out to play as well. Nonetheless, though, the one thing I did get into was Vanishing Realms.
Oh, God, that's my favorite one. That's my favorite
Vanishing
one.
Realms is really good, and they came out with an update about a few weeks ago that they added some new levels, added some more content, and then they also completely rewrote the combat engine.
One guy making that game.
Oh, so I shouldn't even be saying they. That's amazing. Like, it feels, it's one of the most complete feeling games out there.
Yes.
So he put in a new thing called Warrior Mode that when you enable it, it makes the sword combat against the enemies a lot more flowing. So basically, you've got your right hand would be like the sword if that's what you grab it with, and your left hand could be like a shield. And so when you approach a skeleton to fight it, right, you got to remember, like, all VR always sounds so dumb when you're talking about it. It sounds like a lame game, but when you're actually in there, so when I say you have to, when you're fight, you have to walk up to a skeleton. He is eye level with you. He's the same size as you are, and he has these different attacks: overhead, underhand, circling around, and like doing these big swings at you. It's almost like Mike Tyson's punch out. And so you're trying to block him, and you're looking for the opening, and then swinging your sword in a one-to-one way, trying to hit those openings as he's doing his attack animations. And he'll block you, you'll block him, you'll react and respond. I've had like 5-minute sword fights with one skeleton. Like so where I'm just like trying to get through his defense and he's trying to get through my defense and I'm sweating, I'm yelling. and like my wife could attest, like I am screaming at this thing. By the time I'm done, I'm like, yeah, yeah, that's right. You know, and it's just like, it's fighting one skeleton.
Yeah.
So that combat update, even though it's VR, you don't have that tactile feeling of when you hit something, it doesn't vibrate your arm or anything, but they do a really good job of, you can't just stick your sword in his general area and wiggle it around. Like it's only going to count if you give it a good full swing. Yeah. So it really, and when you block somebody, it kind of, the way the sound and the way it bounces off, even though you don't get that physical feedback, you still have a good sense of where things are, why you hit or didn't hit. The enemies have good animations to reflect where they're swinging or how they're being hit. It's really, really good. And it just makes me very excited for what the future holds. Like it's,
yeah.
That's one guy who just figured it out and did a really good job of it. And we're seeing a lot of other games now that are doing similar. So we get so many tech demos and things. Somebody's going to nail this perfectly in the same way that Longbow nailed bow and arrow really, really well.
Yeah, I always talk about Vanishing Realms as like, have you ever wanted to be Link from Legend of Zelda? Guess what? That's that game. That's the experience of feeling like you are Link. Because it's got that wonderful cartoony aesthetic. And I mean, just inside Vanishing Realms, just like looking inside a stump of a log and finding a treasure is like the most thrilling, exciting thing. Because you are physically looking inside a log stump and physically reaching in and grabbing a treasure out of it. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's so good. So that's been my go-to. I've just about finished it. And there's been some really cool scenarios in that too. It's been really neat.
I got a chance to play a game from Ninja Theory, actually. It was a game jam game that they made in just a few hours, the folks from Ninja Theory, for Vive. It's called Dext, and it's awesome. It's really fun. I mean, it's a very simple idea. It's basically Panzer Dragoon or Rez in the sense that you are painting targets and then releasing your gun to release the bullets, you know, how you would do in those games. But the trick here is that one of your Vive controllers is fire. The other of your Vive controllers is ice. You're moving through these levels, just like in Panzer Dragoon, on rails. You're kind of in these really beautiful, vibrant environments. You're moving through on rails and then you see fire and ice enemies around you, or fire and ice nodes, or, you know, fire and ice projectiles, whatever it is. And you have to use the opposite one. So it kind of messes with your brain. When you see fire, you have to use your ice shots. And when you see ice, you have to use your fire shots. And if you shoot the wrong one, you get penalized. It'll mess you up. They'll shoot back at you. But you're trying to string together these point combos by painting the right colored thing. And of course, sometimes there'll be strings of enemies that are like fire, fire, ice, fire, fire. So you like paint, and then you've got to skip over the one in the middle and then paint the other two. All the while you're moving through, they're moving. Pretty cool. And it's because it's so beautiful, the game is really, really fun. I thought it was, smallish game. It was a game jam game that they made in a few hours, but proof of how a very, very familiar concept works really, really well in VR. I also want to read quickly an email that we got at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This comes from Jonathan. He says, "Hey there, Jeff, Christian, and guest. I've been a gamer since the early days of NES and have bought into every generation of console since. For a while, I've been a listener to the VR segments, and I thought to myself, I wouldn't buy in since I have the PS Move, which I rarely use anymore. I want the tech to improve from its infancy and the cost to drop a little bit. I'm of the mind that it may also be a little gimmicky. Remember the Power Glove? Well, that is until 3 days ago. The mall here in Ottawa, Canada, has one of the PlayStation VR road shows. And in listening to Jeff, Christian, and your guests of the week gush about how awesome VR is, I really wanted to try it out and see what all the fuss is about. Well, it has been 4 days now, and I've been back to try more games each and every day. Maybe I just love VR now. I really want the other listeners who may be undecided to jump into VR to make an effort to get to a road show and try PSVR, and not just take the word of you, although you speak the truth. It really is a try before you buy scenario. I tried as many as I could. Battle Zone, which feels like I'm in the world of Tron and is so cool. Ocean Descent, which is breathtaking. Eve Valkyrie, which is a teaser for just how gobsmacking the X-Wing mission in Battlefront could be. And Headmaster is deceivingly hard. It's the soccer goal simulator. He goes on to say he's frustrated that the EB Games in his area only had a few pre-orders, and it looks like all of the employees used them up. And he's hoping that Sony can see how popular the product is and get more of them out there, because he wanted to pre-order it, and it's all sold out. So he says, VR is an amazing thing. Let's hope Sony will do the right thing and make them more available. Sincerely, Jonathan. I thought that was cool. And I agree. Has that been your experience, Sean? Is that people who try it like it?
Yeah, I've yet to have anybody say shrug after they try it out. Everybody's pretty into it. I'm very, very, even just from a social dynamics perspective, I'm really interested to see what PlayStation VR and the news and the talk around it looks like in January. Really curious to see once we get through, you know, Black Friday and Christmas and all that other stuff. I'm really interested to see what kind of impact this has on the zeitgeist, if we're still going to be in for a slow, steady march on VR, or if there's going to be a big cresting wave in popularity, and if it's going to kind of amount to something in the long run in terms of where the industry's at and how it's growing.
Christian, what's your current status as far as whether or not you're going to keep your pre-order for PlayStation VR?
Oh, it's still kept shipping soon.
That sounds about right.
I really want to play Rez. I really want to play Batman. I know it's only 90 minutes or whatever. There are experiences on it that I really want to play. It's just, I don't want to say again that you were wrong saying that free things don't influence your opinion on something. If Sony were sending me a review copy that I were keeping, I would be so excited for Thursday, knowing that I'm going to take a $580, whatever it ends up being with tax, hit when I get this thing for these experiences. I just don't know. I mean, these experiences are great, but and again, I hate being the person that puts a dollar value on entertainment or whatever, but you know, I have a very real budget that I live in, and I don't know, reading the reviews, it's like it works, but some people had extreme nausea, like worse than other headsets. Other people think that, you know, the Move controllers and the camera is just like, the headset's great, but the old tech that supports the headset is kind of garbage and like the worst of any of these headsets.
I just want to be clear. I don't want people to misunderstand what you said. I'm not getting a free version of the...
Oh, no, correct. Yes, you are not. I just meant our talk before about review copies change your opinion on something. It's just like, what do I really want, Jeff? As I wanted Oculus Connect to talk more about how they're including diversity and kind of champion that instead of doing like the 5-minute talk they did about it. So I want to be able to get behind my Oculus again, and then I want to find out that Batman Arkham only has like a 6-month exclusivity window on PSVR, and then I'll just be happy with what I have.
Dude,
that's my dream.
Tell me those games that they showed at Oculus Connect weren't rad. Robo Recall looks so fun.
I'm not going to talk about them.
I knew you wouldn't. Okay. All right. Let's move on. We are running so long. But I want to hear real quickly a little bit of Tabletop Time. But first, let me thank Linode. Linode is a hosting company offering high-performance Linux servers for all of your infrastructure needs. Linode has it all. Lightning-quick servers in the cloud, a super-fast 40 GPS network, automated backups, node balancers, managed services, guides with step-by-step instructions, a simple but powerful control panel, 99.9% uptime, 24/7 support experts, and all the tools you need to get the job done right the first time. And now, Linode offers 2 gigabytes of RAM for only $10 a month. Over 400,000 customers trust the Linode platform, including 5x5. 5x5's infrastructure is happily hosted on Linode. Getting started is easy. Just pick a plan, choose your favorite Linux distro, and pick from one of 8 data centers in America, Europe, and Asia. Just visit linode.com/5x5 today to support the show and use promo code 5x5 for a $10 credit. Linode, simple, powerful, reliable. Tabletop Time.
Right now, right now.
I just wanted to, we haven't done tabletop time in a couple weeks. I haven't been playing much lately, but I want to hear, because you're here, Sean, you played Seafall? You know, have you touched it? Have you seen it? Have you played it?
Well, if you pre-ordered from Plaid Hat Games, if you're in the United States, there's a good chance you're going to be receiving your copy if you haven't already. I pre-ordered from Plaid Hat, and I'm in Canada, so I have not seen my copy yet.
Okay.
I only put it on, there's a couple self-serving reasons I put it on. One is because Rob Davio, who has developed it, is a good friend of mine, and I want to support him. And I did actually help play test Seafall Legacy for years ago. And so I've been really excited for it to come out and to kind of see how it does with people. And the other fun thing about it is that I'm actually an unlock in it.
Are you really?
Yeah, my face is so rad. There's a bunch of people who play tested it who are in the game, like on those character cards. So I'm the navigator. So I'm one of the unlocks.
Oh, how cool is that?
It's fun. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I don't know when. I don't know like when it's actually hitting shelves, but it should be pretty soon at this point.
I had the wonderful distinction to be in a board game as well. There's a game called Age of Soccer. And it's a board game about playing soccer, and one of the characters is named Kanata, and he looks like me. He looks like a chubby version of me.
That's adorable. He's got it's like your baby.
Yeah,
chubby version of Jeff. It's nice.
Yeah, that's amazing, dude. I cannot wait to play Seafall. Of course, it's the next legacy game, as you said, from Rob Davio, who did Risk Legacy and Pandemic Legacy. Which are two of the greatest gaming experiences I've ever had on the table. And this one, we've talked about it. We had Rob on the show too, and he talked a little bit about it. But just to remind people, it's basically a 4X game: explore, expand, exploit, and what's the last?
Exterminate.
I think you're right. Anyway, so it's a massive creation, whereas the other legacy games were built on the backs of existing board games and modified. This is from the ground up, built an entirely new kind of game, his own creation, and then also legacyized it so that it evolves as you play it, which sounds just wildly ambitious and cool. I don't know if you're able to talk about your, playtesting experience, but was it frustrating at all, like to play a game in various states of its creation?
Frustrating is not, you got to have the right attitude. It's like you're going to break it, right? Like, so at some point it almost becomes this funny kind of cooperative experience where you're seeing how long you can keep the machine running until it all falls apart. Like until somebody does something so unexpected that it just, the whole thing just completely. So, and it's really kind of fun too when you're playtesting for a really smart game designer, because you'll play it once. And he's like, oh, like he kind of sees the matrix. He's like, okay. And then he takes the whole thing away. And then 2 hours later, he puts it in front of you again, and it's completely different.
Or
you pull a card, and he's like, oh, no, I don't. He snatches it out of your hand, and he scratches something out, and he writes something on it, hands it back to you, and then you do that instead. So it's like you're sitting in a room, and it's being built around you almost. So is it frustrating? If I was in a position to be like a professional playtester, like I feel people who do Q&A on video games, like there's a part in Gears of War 4 that was so frustrating. Corey Banks and I were playing the co-op, and we were so frustrated at it. I was thinking, like, if I was in Q&A, I probably would have had to play this frustrating thing for like weeks, if not months.
Oh yeah.
So board games,
it was probably more frustrating when the Q&A person was playing it.
God, right? they do good work for us, and they're so unsung. But in board games, it's like it's kind of fun, and a lot of times the way you break it is so funny. So it's a neat experience.
That's awesome. All right, very brief tabletop time this week, but we will be back next week talking about more games. Let's wrap up the show now. We do have our parting gift coming at you very soon, so stick around for that. But I do want to thank Sean Andrich for being with us. Sean, always awesome to be able to get you, and thank you for so much for giving up your day off to hang out with us.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. It's a highlight of the long weekend for sure.
Cool. Let's let people know where they can keep up with you and the awesome stuff that's happening over at Gamers with Jobs.
Yeah, you can go to gamerswithjobs.com. That's our main hub for all that stuff. We do the conference call podcast. We're just wrapping up our RPG podcast called The Unmarked, which actually Rob Davio has been our GM for that. And that's been a really fun time of collaborative storytelling. We're about two or three episodes away from being complete on the story. So it's like, awesome. you'll be able to download it all and just listen to a complete story from beginning to end with no fear that we're going to abandon it or something like that halfway through. So, that's been really cool to do. Yeah, if you want to hit me on Twitter, it's, at Certis, CERTIS. Don't ask why.
I always say this when you're on, but Gamers with Jobs was my first home the first community I found, many, many years ago. First time I felt like I was with my own folks on a website. And for that, it's always had a very special place in my heart. So,
well, thank you.
My first World of Warcraft guild was the Gamers with Jobs guild. Yeah. Good people there. Christian, how about you? What do you got going on this week?
I don't know when it comes out or if it's live or not. And I think I can say it. If not, sorry. But I'm doing something with some of the Screen Junkies crew this week. I don't know if it means it will come out this week or not. I know you've worked with some of those guys, and they do fun, good stuff. I love Hal and a lot of the content they create. So if it's not live this week, look for it soon after that, I guess. I know some other shows they kind of release as seasons and the like, but there should be some cool stuff that you'll see me in over there. Still, I'm playing a lot of these games on Twitch, not full playthroughs. I'm not doing walkthroughs of the games, but if you want to, you know, see Mafia 3 when I get my regular, boring, didn't pay $100 copy of Gears 4, I'll be firing that up this week, along with all the other fall releases. It's twitch.tv/Christian Spicer and archived over on YouTube, which is Christian Spicer 713. And November 15th, I will be recording my second comedy album in San Diego at Lestat's, which is 3343 Adams Avenue in San Diego. We're all going to die. It's free to get in, all ages. The material is probably not appropriate for all ages. I will be swearing. It will be blue, but, you know, all ages are welcome. And it's November 15th in San Diego. So if you are there or around, or know people that are, mark your calendars and come out to the show. I'd love to include your laugh or your arms folded disdain on the album. What about you?
I think if you end up doing a third album, Arms Folded Disdain is not a bad title.
It's not bad.
Well, that's probably the title for this album if it doesn't get released, because there will be too much of that. But it could be the excellent title of this episode of the podcast.
Good point too, yeah. You know that you can always follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata, spelled with two N's and one T. And I've got other shows for you to check out too. Why not listen to me talk about movies over at the Slash Filmcast at slashfilmcast.com, or a comedy science show called We Have Concerns, which you can find at wehaveconcerns.com. All right, let's wrap the show up with our parting gift.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift.
Sean, do you have something to recommend people check out to get them through their week?
Yeah, I mean, maybe this has already been mentioned in the past, but it's kind of new to me. I've just finished up, or I'm about to finish up, Luke Cage. I'm on the last episode. It's been so good. And actually, watching Luke Cage in concert with playing Mafia 3, it's been very interesting. I've really been enjoying the seeing the world through that perspective. And Luke Cage has just been so much fun, and so many great twists and turns in the plot. It's so unexpected at times. They do a lot of really good things with Luke Cage on Netflix.
Awesome. I'm behind. I have not yet started Luke Cage, but I am excited to do so. Christian, how about you? You got a parting gift?
Have you ever watched Daredevil season 2, Jeff?
I still haven't finished season 2, no.
So you're not that excited.
I'm excited for Luke Cage. I've heard Luke Cage is actually way better than season 2 of Daredevil.
It's very good. It's different. It's very good. My parting gift is giving Jeff a hard time. No.
That's thinking, your always parting gift.
Well, Nemesis.
That's your arriving gift.
Well, I play my role of the Resident Evil franchise well. You know what I'm saying? Kyle Kinane, I think, is one of the funniest people in the world. And he has, I think, two albums out already, two specials out. His new one, Loose in Chicago, it airs on Comedy Central on October 15th. So depending on when you're listening to this, you know, if you're running a little behind on podcasts, maybe it's already out. I have not seen this or heard this special. I did see him working on it some and seen some of the bits that are in it. And I think just from that, it's easy for me to recommend Kyle Kinane's Loose in Chicago.
You probably don't need me to recommend Westworld to you. You've probably heard about it already, but just in case you haven't actually given it a watch, it's the new HBO show. I think they want it to be their next Game of Thrones, and boy, I'm hooked already. I think it's particularly interesting to bring up on this show because it's basically about video games. It's basically about the idea of what could a giant role-playing game in the real world be like. And if you've ever played an MMO or any role-playing game, really, I think you will be so intrigued by the sort of gamer philosophy that this show is wrapped around. The creators have talked about being influenced by Red Dead Redemption and BioShock and a whole lot of other cool games. And I think that for me, some of the best parts of it are the ramifications of what it's like to have this full real-world live-action role-playing game. And man, what an awesome production they put together with a really cool cast. So check it out. It's on HBO. And you can watch it online too, HBO Go and HBO Now. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks to Sean Andrich and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to all the folks in the chat room who have really contributed to this show. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us on a Monday morning. You can always do so. We record at 11 a.m. Pacific time on Mondays and stream through Christian's Twitch channel. That's twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. And those of you that downloaded the episode, we appreciate you as well. Thanks for rating us kindly on your platform of choice and recommending us to your friends. We will be next week back. Yes, we will. Next week back. We'll be back next week with more awesome fall games to talk about. Don't forget to vote and register to vote. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.